Jerry, I'm a great alcoholic. First of all, I'd like to welcome all the newcomers to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I can make you a promise right now that you don't ever have to take another drink of alcohol the rest of your life if you don't want to, one day at a time. And, you know, my sponsor's out of town tonight, and I said, well, you're not going to be there, so I guess that means I can tell a few lies, huh? And he says, no, he says, it's going to be taped. And then just before I got up here, Nancy put a little ring on my finger, and I said, what's that for? He says, it's an emerald that allows you to tell the truth. So I guess I'm supposed to tell the truth tonight, huh? You know, if you're new here, sitting here new tonight, and a lot of things that you hear around these rooms, you know, doesn't make any sense or you don't understand it, you're in the right place. When I first started coming around Alcoholics Anonymous, nothing made any sense to me. Anybody who had been talking a foreign language as far as I was concerned. But I couldn't conceive, I couldn't understand what they were talking about. But they were talking about staying sober. They were talking about a higher power in their life. They were talking about living the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous. This is my third time in Alcoholics Anonymous. And by the grace of God and the teachings of Alcoholics Anonymous, good sponsorship and a lot of old-timers around Alcoholics Anonymous that helped me to be where I am today. You know, and a lot of them old-timers are gone today, and I miss them, because they're so detrimental to my sobriety. You know, and it's by the grace of God and the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, I haven't had to take a drink of alcohol since April 11th, 1990. And for that, I am extremely grateful. You know, I consider it a miracle that I'm not drinking today. I consider it a miracle that I'm not using today. I consider it a miracle that I'm not sitting in a penitentiary somewhere today. You know, I'm not the miracle. Alcoholics Anonymous and my higher power, who I choose to call God today, is the miracle. I just happen to be a small part of it, you know. And I'm so grateful for that. You know, I'm grateful to be able to have the privilege and the honor to be able to participate in the meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, whether I'm speaking or whether I'm sitting in a meeting at my home group, or whether I'm pouring coffee or whatever. And the reason I believe it's a privilege to be able to participate in Alcoholics Anonymous is because I don't believe that it's just because I'm an alcoholic that I have the right to sit in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. If I have the right to sit in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, what about the other people out there that died from this disease and never got a chance to sit in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous? They never got a chance. And that's why, for me, I consider it a privilege and an honor, you know. And I'm very grateful to have that privilege. I'm very grateful that I don't have to live the way that I used to live. I'm very grateful that I don't have to feel the way that I used to feel. Yeah. And it's all a direct result of Alcoholics Anonymous. Yeah. I love talking about recovery, but it tells me in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, I have to share my experience, strength, and hope. You know, what it used to be like, what happened, and what it's like now. And then they go on to say, in a general way, thank God. You know. There's a lot of things I share from the recordings of Alcoholics Anonymous. There's a lot of things that I share around the tables of Alcoholics Anonymous. But I guarantee you right now, I do not share everything that happened in my life at the tables of Alcoholics Anonymous. But I can guarantee you one thing, my sponsor knows everything. And, I started drinking at a real early age. I'll make this quick. And, I started drinking at a real early age. because it allowed me to feel different. It allowed me to feel accepted. It allowed me to feel a part of. See, when I was young, when I was about 12, 13 years old, you know, I always wanted to be like the other guys at school. You know, and they was drinking, and they was doing this, and they was doing that, and I wanted to be a part of that. So I started drinking with them, and I found out that alcohol did something for me. You know, it allowed me to do and say things that I couldn't do without it. You know, I'm the type of person that I could walk into a bar, and there could be a good-looking woman sitting at the bar, and I ain't had nothing to drink, and I ain't got nerve to say hi to her. But I could put a couple of drinks in me, and I could talk to her. Give me a couple more drinks, and I was asking her to dance. And give me a couple more drinks, and she's awful damn lucky I didn't let her talk to me. Yeah. That's what alcohol did for me, you know. That's what alcohol did for me. And the first time I went to juvenile hall, it was behind drinking. And I remember the counselors at juvenile hall telling me that if I didn't quit doing, you know, drinking and doing the other things that I was doing, that I was going to end up in California Youth Corps. And I told them, so what? Eventually, I ended up in California Youth Corps. And you know what? The counselors there told me the same exact thing. They told me, they said, you know what? If you don't stop drinking and doing that dope and doing the things you're doing, you're going to end up in state prison. I told them, so what? And eventually, I ended up in state prison. Yeah. I was a very violent drunk. Very, very violent drunk. You know, I loved hurting people. It didn't matter if it was emotionally or physically, but I loved hurting people. You know? I remember I got in a fight out in Florida at a bar one night, and I had the guy whipped. You know? So see, I wasn't satisfied with that. You know? I wasn't satisfied until I got him on the barroom floor and grabbed him by the hair of the head and just beat his head against the barroom floor. And so finally the police came and hauled me off the jail and hauled him off to the hospital. And he ended up with 67 stitches, put his head back. And that's the way I drank. You know, I was the type of drunk, you know, I loved them honky tonk bars. You know, where the cue sticks are flying, bar stools are flying, everything and everybody's flying. You know, and you go out drinking in a bar, you know, the night's not complete until you get in a bar room fight. It just wasn't complete, you know. And, anyway, I went to juvenile hall, then I went to the California Youth Authority, and I ended up in state prison. And originally, they sent me to a 90-day diagnostic study at Vacaville, which, on the norm, it takes them about 60 to 75 days for the counselors to talk to you and the psychiatrists to talk to you, and they send their recommendation back to the courts and then go back to Sydney. Well, I was only there 25 days, and they already knew what they were going to recommend. And I remember the counselors there telling me, you know what, that there's a real good chance that I'm an alcoholic. And I said, you know what, you're crazy. You know, I'm only 20 years old, and my perception of an alcoholic at that time in my life was a person down on 2 and F Street with a brown bag and a wine bottle. That was my perception of an alcoholic. I had no clue whatsoever about the disease of alcoholism. You know, I had no idea that, you know, it was about an obsession coupled with a physical allergy. I had no idea. Anyway, they sent me back to, the Fresno court for sending, and, they gave me 6 months to 14 years on a forgery charge. I went back to the guidance center and went on to the joint where I was doing my time. And I ran into this partner of mine that I was running with at the guidance center. And we broke down a stash of Pruno one night and was eating a bunch of red and drinking that Pruno and decided we didn't like that much. So we escaped. And 3 days later, I'm sitting in the Humboldt County Jail, facing 3 counts of armed robbery, 3 counts of kidnapping, grand theft auto, escape, and 3 counts of assault with intention to great bodily injury. And I fought that case for almost a year. And the best deal that I could come up with that they would give me was 5 years to life. Yeah, we talk a lot about powerlessness in Alcoholics Anonymous. And during that escape, when we got arrested, we was in this stolen car, and there was 3 bad girls in this one road, and we made the first 2 and missed the last one, and we ended up rolling the car. And I'm laying out there in the middle of the road, and there's this constable up there, and he had a shotgun about that far from my head. And he said, please switch so I can blow your brains out. At that point, I was powerless. Because I wasn't moving. I didn't think I'd switch. I hope I didn't. And anyway, I got sentenced to the 5 to life and ended up going back through the guidance center and onto another prison with a little bit more security. And ended up doing a little over 5 years that time. And I got out and I ended up, got a job. My brother got me a job at a tire shop here in Clovis. And, I was writing to this girl when I was in Soledad and she lived in Visalia. And she come down one weekend and we were out partying, me and her and my oldest brother and this other girl and we're sitting in this bar out in Clovis and we're all pretty well drunk. And she says, Jerry, do you love me? And I said, well, hell yes, I do. Yeah. And she said, well, do you love me enough to marry me? And I said, well, hell yes. And she said, well, let's go to Reno and get married. I said, hey, I ain't got no money, no way to get. She says, don't worry about it, it's on me. Now, this is the good alcoholic thinking. Free trip to Reno. So anyway, we go up to Reno and we got married and come back and 2 weeks later it was over. That was a long one. And, I ended up going back on a parole violation. And I got out from that parole violation December 17th of 1976. It was actually 2 weeks later to the day. This was New Year's Eve of 1976. Me and my girlfriend and two of my running partners, we was out celebrating New Year's Eve, and we left the bar in Florida and went out to Pinedale. And I don't think I need to say what we were doing out there. But I think a lot of people probably know. We decided to go back to Clovis and do some drinking and do some dope, and we didn't make it. You know, this one partner of mine was in the back seat. He was playing around, putting his hands over my eyes and all that stuff. And I'd get his hands off my eyes, and I told him, you know what, brother, don't be doing that. It's New Year's Eve. There's a lot of drunks out here. And, but anyway, then he did it again. I got his hands off, and I said, oh, you want to play around, huh? So I started playing around, and I ended up hit a garbage truck head on. I was the only one to live. It was all 3 killed. both of my partners was in the back seat. The driver's truck was in my back seat. Had them pinned in. And they got Diane out and laid her on the shoulder of the road. And I'm over there and I'm pulling on my partner and I'm trying to get him out. And I haven't got a clue that the front wheel of the garbage truck is on his leg and I can't get him out. And I know the car is getting ready to explode at any time. And I'm pulling on him and I'm telling him, come on, brother, come on. And he ain't coming. He's not moving. Finally, the car exploded, and they were both burnt beyond recognition. The only way they was able to identify was through the dental trucks. And Diane lived for 11 days, and the doctor said if she'd have lived, she'd have been vegetable because of the internal injuries. And one more time, I go back to prison. You know, I went to the coal bar there at the end of San Quentin, and they told me, they said, you know what, you definitely got an alcohol problem. And we suggested you get into some kind of 12-step program. And I remember to this day what I told him. He's like, it was yesterday. I told him, you know what, you're crazy. I just happened to be in the wrong place at the wrong time. See, what I didn't take into consideration at that point in my life, three people are dead, and I already spent about 11, 12 years of my life locked up in institutions, but you know, I didn't have a problem. Yeah. They talk about that in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, that delusional thinking. You know, and that delusional thinking is, you know what, I wouldn't know the truth if it came up and bit me in the ass. Yeah. Anyway, I did my time and I got out and I was in and out of prison, you know, a couple, two or three more times. And, last time I paroled, you know, in the beginning before I start talking, I welcome the newcomers to Alcoholics Anonymous, and there's a reason why I do that. Because when I was new to Alcoholics Anonymous, people welcomed me. And it meant a lot to me. It meant a lot to me. You see, I was never welcomed anywhere. You know. If anybody knew I was coming, man, they'd say, you know what, Jerry's on his way, man, hide everything that's about him. Because I was supposed to be blind in a hot seat. And the last time I got out of prison, they said, you know what, if you ever come back to the joint again, please go to another. I thought, you know, that's pretty bad. They don't even want you out of prison. And anyway, that was March of 1984. And you know what, I haven't been back to prison since I've been. I'd like to be able to say I've been sober that long, but that'd be a lie. Yeah. And so when I got out of prison, I thought, you know what, Jerry, what you need, man, you need a woman in your life, man, that, you know, that doesn't drink, doesn't do dope, and doesn't do all that stuff, and, you know, straighten me up, you know. So I hooked up with this woman, and she didn't drink, you know, she didn't do dope, you know, she had prior to that, but she didn't at that time. And anyway, we hooked up together, and we ended up getting married, and that lasted for about 12 years. And right before my fifth AA birthday, she told me that she didn't want to be married anymore, and I said, okay. Next day, I moved in over to my sponsor's house. like I said, you know, this is my third time to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I need to share this because there's so many newcomers here tonight. You know, the first time I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I didn't get a sponsor. I didn't work the steps. I didn't do anything that they suggested that I did. And I went back out and I drank one more time. After 9 months of just sitting in meetings with Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's all I did was sit in meetings with Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't participate. I didn't do anything. And I went back out and I came back in again and I stayed around for 7 months. And I did it a little bit differently this time. I didn't get a sponsor, but I did work the shift. You got good advice. And so obviously, I did the step the way I wanted to do. Not the way that they're suggested out of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I went back out again. And when I came back in this last time, this was April 11th of 1990, I came back in and I did what I thought I would never do. See, my definition of surrender is when the cops are chasing me, stop and put my hands up. And there was no way in hell I would do anything like that. But today I know surrender means to win. See, I'm a winner today. Because I surrendered to the disease of alcoholism. And I surrendered to Alcoholics Anonymous. I quit fighting. You know, I've never ever had a good excuse to drink or to do those. Never. I mean, I've never had a good reason. I had a lot of excuses and a lot of justifications. You know. The judge is always picking on me. He always gives me the aggravated prison sentence. He never gives me a mitigated. Cops are always picking on me. Parole officer is always picking on me. I only turn in 4 dirty tails. I don't know why they're violating my parole. See, what I've learned in Alcoholics Anonymous is that as long as I had somebody else, some other person, place, thing, or situation to blame, that made it okay for Jerry to keep doing it because it wasn't my fault. See, I wasn't being responsible for my actions. And, you know, I was talking to a partner of mine, you know, before the meeting started, you know, and I hadn't seen him in 14 years. And I was telling him about one time I was sitting in my cell in San Quentin, and I accepted the fact that I was going to die in the penitentiary someday. I accepted it. I didn't know if it was going to be from old age or getting stabbed in a riot or whatever. But I knew I was going to die in the penitentiary someday. Why shouldn't I? That's where I spent most of my life. Yeah. And there was a time in my life where I felt more comfortable locked up in an institution than I did on the streets. See, I know how to live in there. I know how to hustle. I know how to do this. I know how to do that. I know how to run the game. And I come back out to the streets, and I can't handle it. It's too much. It's overwhelming. So little did I know, I start getting off into the drinking. Then I start getting off into the other stuff. Then I start getting off into the criminal activity. Yeah. Then I'd be back in county jail, going back to the pen one more time. And I felt relief. I felt at home. You know, if you're new here to Alcoholics Anonymous, I pray to God that you hang around until the miracles happen. Until the miracles happen. And the miracles will happen if you hang around long enough. And, you know, I love Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, like I said, you know, I do have a sponsor. I sponsor other guys. I'm into service. See, since I came in this last time, I started doing what they've been doing around these rooms since 1935. It tells me in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and you can't figure out what to do. You can't figure out what's going on. Work with another drug. Work with another alcoholic. See, when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I was very selfish and self-centered. And they told me, you know what, Jerry, you got to give it away to keep it. And I said, well, why in the hell do I want to give it away? It keeps me sober. He said, well, dummy, you don't understand, do you? I said, oh, obviously not. He said, well, you will if you hang around long enough. So then I started, you know, I started sharing the meetings and, you know, started talking to other people and, see, we never know who we're going to reach, you know. I've had newcomers sitting in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous that have reached me, you know. And that's another thing that I've learned here in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. Just because, you know, I've got a little over 9.5 years of sobriety, I am no better than those people that identify themselves as newcomers. I am no better. I am no different. I'm just a goddamn drunk trying to stay sober one day at a time. That's all I am. Sure, I might have a few more tools in my tool bag, but that's it. And I hope to God that I never see the day where I think, I got this deal down. When I think I've got it, that's when I'll get it. I'll get it big time, too. Yeah. You know, a big part of my sobriety is service work at Alcoholics Anonymous. And I always stress service work at my home group with the Sierra Fellowship. And in my opinion, it's the best fellowship in the world. And I hope you think your home group is the best fellowship. And I've had people come up to me with a week, 2 weeks sober, and they say, you know what, Jerry, you know, you talk about this, you know, getting into service, and, you know, but it takes 6 months to be a secretary, it takes 6 months to do this, and it takes 6 months to do that. I said, yeah, that's true. I said, but you know what? You can have one day and you can get up and pour coffee. See, that's what service work to me is. It's getting out of self and doing something for another human being. For free and for fun. For free and for fun. Just for the hell of doing it. See, and today, you know what? I enjoy doing that. I enjoy doing that. In my recovery in Alcoholics Anonymous, I don't tell people, you know what, you've got to do it the way that I do it, or you ain't going to stay sober, and all that stuff. And like, you know, I've heard some people run around the room do that. Nobody has to do it the way that I do. When I share in the meeting or I speak to the podiums of Alcoholics Anonymous, I just share how I stay sober. And if it helps somebody, you know, that's just icing on the cake. That's the icing on the cake. I've grown to have compassion and love for another human being in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, all my life when I was out there, people tried to, you know, teach me how to love another human being or have compassion. And you know what? I didn't want none of that shit. You know? And if I, you know, have compassion or love another human being, then I got to feel. That's why I drank. That's why I did the things I did, because I didn't want to feel nothing. And I come into Alcoholics Anonymous, and a bunch of drunks taught me how to love another human being. Unconditional. A bunch of drunks taught me how to have compassion for another human being. A bunch of drunks. Sometimes, you know, it's just this deal called Alcoholics Anonymous that is just, like a real good friend of mine says, it's just awesome. It's just awesome. You know, before I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, I would rob you in a hot tip. I'd kick in your door and take all your stuff. There was nothing safe around. Nothing. And today, in Alcoholics Anonymous, now I've got a full-time job. You know, our self-tradition states that we're self-supporting through our own contribution. And I have a job today, and I get paid to do those jobs. And, I have credit cards in my wallet, and they got my name on them. What a deal! What a deal! I've got a checking account, got my name on it, and that's what a deal! What a privilege! You know. See, I talk about privileges in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I have a lot of privileges. But with those privileges comes responsibility. See, before I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, wherever I happened to be, whether it was a county jail or some institution somewhere, they had control of my light switch. They'd turn it off when they wanted to, and they'd turn it on when they wanted to. I go through the challenge, I gotta stand in line with two or three thousand other convicts, get a cup of coffee and carry food. See, today, I get to walk into my house, I get to walk in the door and flip on the light switch. I get to get up in the morning, go out to the kitchen, make a pot of coffee, sit on the couch, drink a couple cups of coffee before I go to work. But see, with all that comes responsibility. I've got to pay the PG&E bill. If I don't pay the PG&E bill, I can flip that switch all I want. Ain't nothing going to happen. I can turn that coffee pot on all I want. Ain't no coffee going to come out of it. You know, I believe that Alcoholics Anonymous is an action program. It's not a program where I can sit around my ass and disrespect it to be handed to me. First, I have to make some decisions. I turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understand Him, not as you understand, but as I am. And then once I make those decisions, I gotta follow it through with some action. Like, I got a cup of coffee right here. And I'm gonna make a decision to take a drink of that coffee. I made the decision. Ain't nothing happening, ain't moving. I've gotta take some action. I gotta pick that cup up and take a drink. And that's what Alcoholics Anonymous is. It's an action program. I'm going to get out of it exactly what I put into it. If I'm not willing to put anything into it, I'm not going to get anything out of it. I've done proved that to myself twice. First two times I was in Alcoholics Anonymous, I wasn't willing to put anything into it because you know what? I wanted it handed to me. Man, I love you too. Now, you got to picture this. This guy that I'm talking about, he's twice as big as me. He's got twice as many tattoos. And we're standing in the middle of a maximum security penitentiary, hugging each other, telling each other that we love each other. That's Alcoholics Anonymous. That's Alcoholics Anonymous. An example. You know. And I remember I asked them guys one time, I said, you know what? I said, you guys don't know if you're ever going to hit the streets again. Why do you keep coming to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous? You know what their reply was? He told me, he says, you know what, Jerry? He says, we may have to be locked up physically, but we do not have to be locked up emotionally or spiritually. He says, and when you bring these meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous into these institutions, he says, you drive out here for an hour and a half to this desolate place and hang around for an hour and a half to talk to a bunch of old convicts and drive back for an hour and a half and get back home at 12:30, get up at 5 o'clock and go to work. And he says, you allow us, you bring us the message that, you know what, that we don't have to be locked up personally. We don't have to be locked up emotionally. You know? And, what a deal. What a deal. Yeah. You know, like I said earlier, I got a full-time job as, driving, and I work for my sponsor part-time, and because of Alcoholics Anonymous and the actions that I choose to take, at both places that I work, I have a corporate credit card with my name on it. For, strictly for business use only. You know, to get gas and stuff like that. You see, people trust me to do it. People trust me to do it. Yeah. And that's a direct result of Alcoholics Anonymous. Yeah. I guarantee you, when I got here, I was not trustworthy. I was not trustworthy. Yeah. You know, I'll tell my, little airplane story. And, it's about this, this guy, he's up in an airplane. Up there about 2,000-3,000 feet or however high they go. And he's getting ready to jump out of the airplane with a parachute. And they tell him before he jumps, he says, it's only suggested that you pull the ripcord. It's not mandatory. But if you want to live, I would pull it. See, that's what Alcoholics Anonymous is to me. It's my ripcord for life. See, it's just suggested that I get a sponsor. It's just suggested that I work the steps with that sponsor. It's just suggested that I get into service. It's just suggested that I sponsor other guys and pass on to them what was passed on to me. It's not mandatory. But see, I've already tried it my way before and it didn't work, and so I tried it their way, doing it the way that I do it today, and for, you know, it's working. It's working today, you know. Yeah. And that's what Alcoholics Anonymous is. It's my ripcord to life. You know, if life got any better, I'd swear up and down it might be illegal. And, you know, I have a good job, you know. I have a lot of beautiful friends in Alcoholics Anonymous. I have a beautiful lady in my life. She's right over here. And life is good. Life is good. And, you know, so if you're new or fairly new to Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, you haven't got a sponsor, get a sponsor. It's only suggested. You know. And work the steps. You know. It helps if you work the steps with somebody that's already worked. You know. And, yeah, I know today that, you know, if it wasn't for Alcoholics Anonymous and a higher power in my life who I choose to call God, you know, I would not be standing up here today. Yeah. I would not be standing up here today. You know, we, at Sierra Fellowship, we lost a real good member, sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that, you know, that man was a walking example of Alcoholics Anonymous. He was dying from cancer, and he knew he was dying. He was going downhill quick. And he'd walk into meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous and say, you know what? I'm dying. And I don't want to take a drink. Now, if that's not the best excuse in the world to take a drink, I don't know what the hell it is. But that man was sitting in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous and thought about it the other day. He knows he's not going to be here that much longer. And he don't want to take a drink of alcohol. And he's sitting in a meeting with Alcoholics Anonymous. I can't honestly say that if I knew I was going to die in 6 months or 9 months or 3 months or whatever, I cannot stand up here and honestly tell you that if that happens to me, that I will not want to take a drink. I have no clue. I have no clue. That's an unknown. I would hope that I don't want to take a drink. But I don't know. I don't even know what tomorrow's got in store for me. You know? And there's so many examples of Alcoholics Anonymous. Yeah. Good, bad, or indifferent. Good, bad, or indifferent. I've seen people around the program with 20, 21, 22 years of sobriety, and this is just my opinion, but you know what, I don't want a day of this, bro. And I've seen guys walking around meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous for 60, 90 days, and you know what, and they got something I want. What a concept. Yeah. So you see, the point I'm trying to make is not the quantity of sobriety that you have, it's the quality. Yeah. It's the quality. Yeah. It's real easy to sit in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous and practice these principles in all my affairs. But it's a whole different story when I walk out these doors. Am I practicing these principles when I walk out the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous? I believe I am, to the best of my ability. Yeah, when somebody cuts me off on the freeway, sometimes I still flip them off. Sometimes I still want to run them off the road and drag them out of the car and beat them to death. You know? But I know today, you know what? Those thoughts are going to come into my head. See, I have no control over the thoughts that come into my head. The only thing I have control over is my actions and my attitude. You know, I've learned in Alcoholics Anonymous how to feel. I've learned, you know, how to feel pain. I've learned how to feel joy. You know, I used to always push myself to the limit. And, you know, since me and Nancy've been together, she's helped me to see where I push myself. Because if it was up to me, you know, I'd be involved in Alcoholics Anonymous 24 hours a day. But see, Alcoholics Anonymous, what it's done for me is it allows me to stay in service and do what I do to stay sober. But you know what? I still have a personal life too. And it's surrounded with Alcoholics Anonymous. He's a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. So I am surrounded by Alcoholics Anonymous 24 hours a day. I work with guys that are sober members of Alcoholics Anonymous. My life is just truly, truly blessed to me. It's like I said before, if you're sitting in here new, or fairly new to Alcoholics Anonymous, if a drunk like me can do it, then you can do it. anybody can get sober. Anybody can stay sober if they want it badly. See, for me, I have to want to be sober more than I want to take a drink of alcohol. I have to want it. And I do today. Because I see what has come into my life and how my life has become as a direct of being sober. And I see where my life came from. And I tell you, it's a long way from sitting in them cells, in those institutions, accepting the fact that I'm going to die here someday to where I stand today. But you know what? I pray God that I never forget. You know what? I got a long way to go, too. You see, I'll never get there. Where in the hell is there? I don't know where the hell there is. I know where here is. I'm at the Lionel Club in Fresno, California. That's where I'm at today. That's where I'm at this moment. I sponsor a lot of guys. There's one, two, three of them here tonight. And I love each and every one of them. I love them with all my heart. I do anything for them. If it's within my power, I do anything for them. And, you know, if you're new to Alcoholics Anonymous, you're wondering what the hell a sponsor is. Well, I don't know what other people may tell you or whatever, but for me, you know, all I do as a sponsor is I take them through the steps the way that I would take them through the steps and you know, some get in service, you know, in Alcoholics Anonymous, because that's what keeps me sober. If not, why waste your time? That's why I picked the sponsor that I picked, because I wanted what he had. He's got what I want. So I do what he does. He goes to meetings. He's in service. He sponsors us. He talks to other alcoholics on the phone. So that's what I do. And it's working. And it works real good. I don't really know what else to share about, except, you know what, I'm real grateful to be in this meeting.